ॐ साईश्वराय विद्महे सत्यदेवाय धीमहि तन्नः सर्वप्रचोदयात्। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्री साईश्वरार्पणमस्तु। ॐ श्री साईराम, ऑफरिंग मोस्ट हम्बल प्रणाम्स एट द डिवाइन लोटस फीट ऑफ अवर एवर प्रेजेंट लॉर्ड। Invoking Bhagwan's presence and benediction for today's satsang, dear sisters and brothers, my loving Sairam to all of you. Firstly, I offer today's talk at the Divine Lotus Feet. Na tapamsi na tirthanam na shastra japanahi samsara sagarodhare sajjanam sevanam vina. It means, not by penance, not through pilgrimage, neither by chanting, nor by the study of scriptures, but by serving the humanity alone, can one cross this ocean of samsara, the transmigratory cycle of birth and death. And we have all heard this famous statement of Bhagwan, the hands that serve are holier than the lips that pray. And the organization founded by Bhagwan itself is called as Shri Satya Sai Seva Organization. Such is the exalted position that is given to Seva in Bhagwan's divine mission. Once a senior professor from Bhagwan's university who felt that who has no enough time for his personal spiritual life amidst the busy schedule of teaching students, he wanted to quit his job, go to Himalayas to meditate. So he tenders his resignation. And when Bhagwan inquires about this, he says, Swami, in this busy schedule of my secular life, of teaching the students and my work in the university, I have no time for my spiritual life. That's why I have quit. Then Swami tells him, if you segregate your life like this, this is my secular life, this is my spiritual life, then I will not grant you in 10,000 births what you are seeking from me. So the message is very clear to all of us, isn't it? We have to spiritualize our entire life. So in this endeavor of spiritualizing our life, is seva enough or do we need sadhana too? If we need both, how are they interrelated or how do they complement each other? Is what today's topic is. See, what exactly do we mean by seva? Is it a duty? Is it an obligation? Or is it helping others or giving away charity? Seva is much more than all these things. A devotee who was blessed to travel with Bhagwan in the car once, and the devotee was seated in the back, in the front with the driver, and Bhagwan was at the back. And Bhagwan gives him two bananas and tells him, one is for you, give the other to the driver. So the devotee promptly hands over one banana to the driver. And Swami says, what are you doing? He is driving. How can he eat the banana? You peel the banana and feed him so that he can eat. So what does this mean? It means seva is something which should spontaneously flow from us. It is innate within us and it should be naturally brought out through us. And that is why once when students pray to Bhagwan, Swami, give us an opportunity to do seva, Swami said, seva is your birthright. So seva should be as natural as this, And that is why we have heard Bhagwan telling us, Paropakaraya phalanti vrikshaha, paropakaraya vahanti nadyaha, paropakaraya duhanti gavaha, paropakarartham idam shariram. It means, just as trees yield fruits to selflessly serve humanity, just as rivers flow, and the cows give us milk for our sake, this body is given to us for the very purpose of serving others. That is the purpose why we have this body. So, what exactly do we understand by Paropakara? Is it just serving others or is there more to it? Bhagwan says it is para plus upa plus kara. Para means divinity, upa near, kara to join. It means when we do seva, when we serve others, it must take us to Bhagwan. So seva is communion with God. That's why Swami would say true seva is when you inquire as to who you are. That is the purpose of seva. That is why when we split the word seva, it is sa eva. Sa means him, eva like. It means become like him, become like God. You should reach that stage. That is the purpose of seva. And now let's see what sadhana is. As Swami says, it is sa plus dhana. Sa, divinity, dhana, wealth. When we acquire the divine wealth, it is sadhana. So again we see that sadhana is also communion with God. That's why Swami would say, true sadhana is merging the vak in the manas in the buddhi in the atman. You should realize your true nature, atman. That is the purpose of sadhana. Sadhyate anena iti sadhana. That by which the goal of human life is accomplished. That is sadhana. So we see that both seva and sadhana serve the same purpose. So why do we need both? That is what we are going to discuss today. Now we shall come back to seva. If seva has to reach its fruition, if it has to take us to Bhagwan, are there any principles with which seva should be done? Yes, as per the teachings of Bhagwan. Swami would often say, when a thorn pricks your foot, not only the foot feels the pain, the eyes start watering. Your hand rushes to pull out the thorn to relieve this suffering. Why? Because when one part of the body feels the pain, it is natural for every other part to rush to relieve this suffering. Similarly, Swami says, this entire creation, one huge body of God, it is known as the cosmic form of the God, which was released, which was revealed to Arjuna in the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Vishwarupa Darshana. It is the Virata Swarupa of the Lord. And as the Purusha Suktam says, Brahmanosya Mukhamasid Bahu Rajanya Kritaha, the Brahmanas form the head, the Kshatriyas form the shoulders, the Vaishyas, the thighs, and so on. So everyone in this existence is a part of this huge body of the Lord. And in this creation, when anyone suffers, it is but natural for all others to feel this pain, and they must rush to relieve this pain. So it is this principle of oneness that we feel with the entire creation is what is needed for seva to reach its fruition if the seva has to take us to God. So the principle of recognizing this unity in the apparent diversity, multiplicity is very, very important for seva. As Swami would say, Parulu, Parulu Kadaya, Paramatmude. There is no para, the other. Everyone is Paramatma. In every Padartha, what you see, Swami would say, is Parartha, in every object what you see is this ultimate supreme principle. As the Lord in the Bhagavad Gita says, Kshetrajnan chapi mam vidhi sarva kshetreshu bharata. Know me to be the knower of the field in all the fields. The all-pervading consciousness is what we have to recognize through this unity principle of seva. The next principle is, say we have arranged bhajans at home, and at the end of this spiritual satsang, we want to offer some food item to the Lord as naivedyam to be distributed as prasadam. So just think how much of efforts we put in this naivedyam making. We procure the best of the ingredients, the best of the utensils, and that day the experts in cooking, the Nala and the Bhima of the home, they will be in charge of cooking. Why? Because we are offering it to the Lord. Similarly, if we make it a habit to offer every thought, word and deed of ours to Bhagwan, how much of efforts we will be taking to purify that act itself, isn't it? So, it is this purity principle that we have to do seva. See, we all know that the name of Mother Teresa is synonymous with seva, isn't it? Once, when this mother was rescuing a badly wounded leper with full of pus oozing from the body from a gutter, this person called Malcolm Muggeridge, he remarks with great disgust, "I will not do it for $1 million. Then the mother calmly says, "I will not do it for $1 million either." "Then what for you're doing?" "It is for my God I am doing this." So it is this principle of divinity is what we need to bring into seva. And the next one is 100 rupee contribution made by a higher secondary school student of Bhagwan for the super speciality hospital here in Prashanti Gram was worthy of mention by Bhagwan. Why? This boy had come out of his comfort zone. He had done his own laundry, saved this 100 rupees to offer it to Bhagwan for the seva of the hospital. So, it is the spirit of selfless sacrifice is what we need to do seva with the right spirit. And the next principle, though we all know very well, we conveniently choose to ignore it. What is it? See, the magnitude of seva that goes on in Bhagwan's institutions and hospitals which do not charge a penny is not known to many even today. A couple of weeks ago, when I was on duty, night duty in our emergency ward in the hospital, a family walked in the wee hours of the morning, and the lady of the family was not keeping well, and we kept her under observation and we treated her. And they had come all the way from Hyderabad for darshan. And when we discharged the lady, her husband came to us and said, "Where can I complete the formalities? Where do I make the payment?" And when one of our nurses explained to them that it is Swami's hospital, we do not charge a single penny, he was surprised. He said, "I thought probably the treatment is subsidized here, and I never thought it is free. We walk in the middle of the night and everything is done for us at free of cost. It is amazing." This is what he said. See, even today, people do not know about it. Why? Because there is no publicity, there is no pomp and show, there is no propaganda. In the 1960s, in Prashanti Nilayam Ashram, during the Dasara celebration, Narayan Seva used to be arranged on a massive scale. When a devotee said to Swami, "Swami, we must put it in the newspaper because such a large scale of Seva that we are doing," Swami said, "When your family members and guests visit your home, don't you feed them?" "Yes, Swami, I feed them." "Do you put it in newspaper?" See, seva has to be done as silently as possible. Otherwise, what happens is it becomes a matter of doership, sense of agency, and increasing our own ego. That is what happens to us. Then the very purpose for which seva is done is defeated. Through selfless seva, we must reduce our ego, we must reduce our doership, ahankara, mamakara. If that doesn't happen to us, where does such a seva take us, isn't it? Such a seva binds us again and again to the samsara. See, when we entertain doership, we are entertaining the enjoyership. So to enjoy this fruit of action, we have to come back to this earth again and again, isn't it? Such a seva becomes a bondage for us. See, if we have to do seva with all these principles, what is it that is primarily required for us to do seva? No doubt, we have to invest our energy, efforts, and put in even money and coordinate a lot of things. But what is the primary requisite for seva so that seva takes us to Bhagwan? So that seva becomes sa-eva. And as per the teachings of Bhagwan, we all know very well the primary requisite is a loving heart. A heart full of love is what we need to do seva. When this love is there, everything else will fall in place. Everything is an offshoot of this primary value, love, isn't it? So, it is the attitude with which we do seva matters if seva has to reach its fruition. An attitude of love, an attitude of compassion, an attitude of even respect, reverence, and gratitude to the recipient of the seva, because they are giving us an opportunity to redeem our own lives. This is what we need. And our medical superintendent, Dr. Narasimhan sir, often shares with us the five principles that Bhagwan had told them in an interview for seva to become Sai Seva. The first one, he says, is arogya. We need good health, a sound mind in a sound body is what we need to undertake seva also. The second one is prarthana. We must pray to the Lord to give us an opportunity to do seva. The third one is tapana. We must have the deep yearning that comes from the heart, not just from the lips, to do seva. The fourth one is prema, love. And the fifth one is sacrifice, selfless tyaga, which we have already seen. So if we have to get this attitude, how does this attitude come to us? Does it come to us overnight? Is love all, serve all, help ever, hurt never so easy for us? If it is so, we all would be realized in a trice, and we wouldn't be struggling with our inner enemies every day, isn't it? So, in order to get this attitude, we must incessantly chant the name of the Lord, think of Him always, pray to Him and hold on to Him, come what may. And this is where sadhana steps in. Sadhana prepares our mind to undertake seva in the right spirit so that seva takes us to Bhagwan. And when it comes to sadhana, Bhagwan has given us a wide variety to choose from. And if we look at the 9-point code of conduct, there are all these sadhanas: daily meditation and prayer and singing bhajans, and attending study circle and satsang. It is a great sadhana, as Swami says, to remove the rust and dust of laziness. This satsang is very important for us. And regular study of Sai literature, the sadhana of highest order, where we understand the teachings of Bhagwan so that we can put them into practice. And this is the importance of sadhana as far as seva is concerned. See, once students from Vrindavan campus had come to Prashanti Nilayam, and this happened long ago, and they were involved in Laddu Prasadam making. Then Bhagwan visits their dorm one day and asks them, "How many laddus have you prepared today?" They quote certain number. Swami says, "This is much less than the laddus prepared by the Anantapur girls." And next day also same thing repeats, and this day also the number of laddus made by them is much less than the laddus prepared by the girls, and this repeats a couple of times, and the boys are into frenzy of churning laddus day in and day out, and the whole place becomes a laddu factory. Even then they cannot outnumber the girls in the terms of the laddus made. And with great with intense prayers to Bhagwan and great introspection, they come to know that Anantapur girls had prepared every laddu by chanting the name of Bhagwan, by singing bhajans throughout this process. With this attitude of prayer to the Lord and offering the act itself to the Lord, and no wonder, every laddu made by the girls was much more than many, many prepared by the boys who were involved in this prasadam making act just with the rajasic tendency of outnumbering the opposite team or with the competitive spirit. So it is the bhava, it is the attitude of prayer and gratitude and the attitude of worship of the Lord, that is what transforms a binding karma into liberating karma yoga, and that is how our bondage decreases. And if this has to happen, we need sadhana to get the right attitude to do seva. That is why it is said, seva without sadhana is a bondage. We are increasing our own bondage to this samsara. We come back to this earth again and again. Punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam continues. So this is the importance of sadhana in seva. And when we say it is the right attitude that is required for seva, not only through our actions, even through our thoughts and words, we can do seva, isn't it? See, when we pray for others, when we chant samasta lokah sukhino bhavantu, when we kindly, lovingly speak to someone, that is all seva. If rudram chanting is done twice in prashanti nilayam every day, it is a seva, isn't it? Because it's the vibrations of the divine chanting, it sanctifies the atmosphere and removes negativity from atmosphere. So with the right attitude that comes from sadhana, our entire process itself becomes an expression of seva. But the most important thing as far as sadhana is concerned that we remember is, once a lady came to Bhagwan, a lady devotee, and said, "Swami, I do Likhita Nama Japa every day. Hundreds of times I write Om Shri Sai Ram, Om Shri Sai Ram, and I have completed so many, many books." Then Swami said, "Your handwriting would have improved. That's all." See, this should not happen to us in sadhana. Sadhana should not become a mundane mechanical process. Sadhana should be done with awareness of the awareness of the purpose for which the sadhana is done, and there has to be intensity and there has to be consistency. See this BABA, BABA, be aware, be alert. Be aware of the purpose of human life and do your sadhana for that sake, and be alert to the pitfalls. So if we are not alert to this pitfalls, not only sadhana becomes a matter of, you know, a mechanical process for us, and it will not give the right attitude for seva, and seva itself, you know, loses its purpose, and it is and the seva will be done just for the sake of power, position or profit, name and fame, that's all, and it will not liberate us. See, when Gujarat earthquake happened, many, many organizations plunged into seva, isn't it? And I read somewhere that the people who went to serve the victims, they were seen throwing food packets and also this clothing to these victims. And all these people would plead with them, "We are not beggars, please don't throw things at us. We are like you. Unfortunately, we have lost everything, that's all." But just think, if the seva is attitude, with the right attitude of love that comes from sadhana, what happens to us? And in this context, on the website of Radio Sai, I saw a beautiful picture of a Sai Seva Dal in white and white with blue scarf combing the hair of a little boy who is lost in this earthquake. So, this seva itself becomes a powerful tool for us for liberation if seva is done like this, with this attitude of love and compassion that comes from sadhana. And now we shall see how seva complements sadhana. Once, a very ardent devotee of Bhagwan, Dr. Fanibanda, happened to ask Swami, "Swami, what is the role of Sri Satya Sai Seva Organization in your divine mission?" Swami said, "Nothing." "Nothing, Swami? Then why is such a big organization spread across the globe over more than 190 countries? Swami said, "It is for your Chitta Shuddhi that I have given the Seva Organization to you. Chittasya Shuddhaye Karmaha. Seva purifies our mind." See, there was a grandfather who was very keen that his little grandson takes to seva from a very young age. But somehow, this little boy was not interested in doing seva. So the grandfather gives him a basket and says, "Go to the nearby river and bring water in this basket and fill this bucket with that water." So this little boy takes the basket and makes several trips back and forth, bringing the water in the basket. But the basket is full of holes and it doesn't hold any water. So he is not able to fill the bucket with water. So he comes back and complains to his grandfather, "What is this, grandpa? What is the purpose of this futile exercise? The basket is full of holes and it doesn't hold any water. And why have you asked me to do this?" Then the grandfather says, "My dear child, how was the basket when I gave it to you?" The boy says, "Oh, grandpa, it was so dirty and filthy. It had lost its white color. It had turned brown." "And, my dear child, how does the basket look like now?" The boy says, "The basket has become so clean, it is sparkling white now." And the grandfather says, "There you are. This is what seva does to you. As you keep on doing the seva, your heart becomes clean. The purity of your heart increases. That is because as we do seva, we develop sensitivity for others. When there is sensitivity, selfishness from us naturally goes away. That is how seva cuts at the root of selfish desire, kama, which is the mother of all the other vices, all the other inner enemies, the Arishad Vargas in us. And this is how we get Chitta Shuddhi, purity of the heart, from seva. As we all know, we are all made up of three gunas, isn't it? Sattva, Rajas and Tamas. Similarly, there are three types of actions that we undertake: tamasic actions, rajasic actions and sattvic actions. When we do seva, when we get Chitta Shuddhi, when the purity in us increases, naturally the sattva guna in us increases. See, to desist from doing an action is the symbol of tamoguna. And when we do any action or even seva with an eye on the fruit of action, That becomes Rajoguna or a Rajasic karma. And when we do an action for the sake of the larger good of the world, I don't want anything for my personal gain here. I will not ask what is in it for me. There is no swartham, swaprayojanam. I am doing it for the welfare of the world. I renounce my attachment to the fruit of action. I don't want any personal gain from it. That is symbolic of sattva guna. Therefore, whenever purity of the mind increases, which comes from seva, naturally the tamasika karmas get nullified in our life, rajasika karmas get minimized, and sattvika karmas get maximized. And with so much of sattva guna in our mind, the moment we sit for meditation, the mind starts soaring high. We are able to focus better in our sadhana. The intensity of our sadhana increases when we have this purity, chitta shuddhi, that comes from seva. And another advantage, the most important thing that we get from seva is, we all know that Bhagwan would be waiting for the boys to return from grama seva even in the late afternoons, and it would be an opportunity for these boys to have some bhashan with the Lord. And on one such occasion, Swami called the boys and said, "Do you know why I give you this little opportunities to do seva? Because tomorrow, when you go away from here, when you go into the world, life will not be the same. There will be ups and downs. There will be trying and testing times. And to go through such times, you will need the grace of the Lord. See, when I give you an opportunity to do seva and you do the seva, that will give me an opportunity to shower my grace upon you, and that grace will be the saving grace for you. It will protect you, especially in your times of need." As Swami says, when a doctor gives a morphine injection to a cancer patient, this morphine injection will not change the cancer process, but it will reduce the pain and suffering of the patient. Similarly, the grace of the Lord that is earned from seva, that will mitigate the magnitude of the consequences that we ourselves have to go through because of our negative karma. Say, for instance, if one has to lose a leg in an accident because of the negative prarabdha karma, if he has sufficient grace of the Lord earned from seva, then what happens is he may end up with a small fracture in the leg which can be easily fixed. Or he may meet with this accident in a place which is very close to an excellent medical facility where his problem can be tackled. So this grace is like the insurance, as Swami says, which one can draw at times of need without any upper limit. And this is how grace of the Lord, which we get from sadhana, reduces our karmic burden. And that is why it is said, sadhana without seva is a burden. So in mutuality, when we put seva and sadhana together, we say, seva without sadhana is a bondage, sadhana without seva is a burden. We all know this famous dialogue between Vibhishana and Hanuman, isn't it? When Vibhishana asks Hanumanji, "Like you, I also incessantly chant the name of Lord Rama, but how is it that you are the recipient of special grace of the Lord, Vishesha Anugraha? Why is it so?" Then what is Hanumanji's reply? He says, "It is not only important to chant the Lord's name, but it is more important to be of service to the Lord. Rama Kaja Kariveko Atura." This is what we chant in Hanuman Chalisa, isn't it? See, this Hanumanji, when he was asked by Ravana, "Who are you?" he says, "Dasoham Kosalendrasya. I am the servant of the king of Kosala, Lord Rama. And when Lord Rama asks him the same question, "Who are you, Hanuman?" he says, "Deha buddhya dasoham." When I think of myself as the body, I am your dasa, I am your servant. Then, jiva buddhya tvadaivamshakaha. When I think of myself as this individual soul, I am a part of you. Atma buddhya tvameva aham iti me nishchala matihi. But my firm conviction is, when I think of myself as Atman, I and you are one. This is the state of soham. So if we have to reach the state of soham, we must start from dasoham, from the stage of seva. That is why Swami would often say, it is only a kinkara who can become shankara. So this is the importance of seva in our lives. And since it reduces our karmic burden, and also since it increases the sattva guna in us, seva complements sadhana. So, in a nutshell, we can say, sadhana is the root, seva is the fruit. Sadhana to see the God who is inside of us, the antaryami, and seva to see the God who is outside of us, who is immanent in the creation, who is the Vishwavyapi God, the all-pervading God. And if we say that seva is the expression of the light that is there in a bulb, and if God is the powerhouse to which this bulb has to be connected, the connecting cord between these two is sadhana. It means stronger the connection, brighter is the light. Seva, to get rid of our tamoguna, laziness, and also to get rid of the chitta mala, the impurities of the mind, so that we get chitta shuddhi, and sadhana, to get rid of our rajoguna, our nature of attachment, and also to get chitta ekagrata, a mind that is scattered in the world, to collect that mind and to make it to focus upon Swami. That is the purpose of sadhana. When we have both chitta shuddhi and chitta ekagrata, that is when we qualify for the jnana marga, the process of self-inquiry, the path of wisdom, to get rid of the third component of ignorance, which is called deep-seated ignorance or avarana. And this is how seva and sadhana complement each other. Once, a student prayed to Swami, "Swami, yesterday in the discourse you said, it is very important for us to tread the path of Karma Yoga. And a couple of days ago, you said, Bhakti Marga is the highest. And someday you also mentioned, without the Jnana Marga, the path of wisdom or Jnana Yoga, you cannot get liberated. So we are confused about this, Swami. You please explain to us in simple terms." Then Swami said, "Have you seen a ladder?" The boy said, "Yes, Swami. How does a ladder look like?" "Swami, there are two poles on either side and there are rungs in between." Swami said, "There you are. See, bhakti and jnana are the two poles which are on either side, and the rungs in between are the steps of karma. As you take one step at a time on these steps of karma, as you go higher and higher, both bhakti and jnana will increase." That's why Bhagwan would often say, karma yoga is the earthen lamp and bhakti yoga is the oil you put in it, and dhyana yoga is the wick, and the light that you see is jnana yoga. And if we have to spiritualize our entire life, both this seva and sadhana are equally important for us, and we have to integrate both. That is why in the 9-point code of conduct, the charter given by Bhagwan to Sri Satya Sai Seva organization, all the sadhanas and seva are there. Once, long ago, in our Sri Satya Sai Seva organization in Oman, we had a workshop on Karma Yoga. And we had a very interesting quiz in this workshop. And one of the questions that was asked in the quiz was, what is the number of projects that is being currently undertaken by Sri Satya Sai Seva International Organization of Oman? And there were multiple choices. There were four options. Some numbers were there. Five was there, and three, six, and one of the answers was zero. What do you think is the right answer for this question? The answer is none, zero. See, the moment we entertain doership, that we are undertaking so many seva projects in the organization, the very purpose of doing the seva, even the very purpose of doing the sadhana also is lost. And when we combine seva and sadhana together, we are able to reach this stage where we shun our ego, we give up our doership, we give up kartritva, bhoktritva, and we are able to shun ahankara, the feeling of I that I am doing, and mamakara, the feeling of mine. And this is very important for a sadhaka in his spiritual journey, for which both seva and sadhana are needed. Now, I will quickly touch upon some of the pointers from the Bhagavad Gita to do both seva and sadhana in the right spirit. See, Karma Yoga itself is defined as doing karma with bhakti to get jnana. When we do work as worship, that leads to wisdom. WWW. See, both seva and sadhana are there in this, isn't it? The first pointer is yoga karmasu kaushalam. When we translate this into English, it is excellence in action is yoga. What is this excellence or kaushala that we are talking about? Is it mere expertise or perfection that we bring into every action? No. Kaushala in its deeper meaning is normally a karma that binds us to samsara. See, karma binds us because there is karma phala. To enjoy or suffer the karma phala, we come back again and again. So, a karma that normally binds us to this samsara, if it is done in a way that liberates us, that is called kaushala. That is the excellence that takes us to yoga. So for this, what we need is to do every karma on the basis of swadharma or atma dharma, not out of mamakara, our attachment to it, but out of mama dharma. It is my dharma to do so, and whatever the position the providence has put me in, and I will do it as per the dictates of my Atman, Atma Dharma. This is called Swadharma Buddhi. And the next pointer is Tat Kurushva Madarpanam. Offer everything to me. See, this is the crux of seva and sadhana. When we offer whatever we do to the Lord as Naivedyam, it becomes Samarpana Buddhi. We will be not only purifying this action, but we also get the anugraha, the grace of the Lord. So the second buddhi is samarpana buddhi. The third pointer is, then what happens is, karmani eva adhikaraha te ma phaleshu kadachana. We will be doing every duty without seeking any karma phala, personal reward. I have done my best and I have left the rest to God. I have done it as an offering to the Lord, and I am not worried about the fruit of action, the karma phala. Then no karma phala is accrued. Everything that comes out of it is anugraha phala. It is called asanga buddhi, non-attachment to the fruit of action. See, this word asanga, jitasanga, muktasanga, sangam tyaktva, non-attachment, is mentioned as many as 3 times in the Bhagavad Gita, emphasizing the importance of this asanga buddhi for a seeker. Then the fourth pointer, when we do everything as naivedyam, and when we have done karma phalatyaga, renounced our attachment to the fruit of action, then what happens is we receive every outcome as Lord's prasadam. This is called the prasada buddhi. We don't grumble, we don't complain about the outcome when we have this prasada buddhi. See, when we go to a temple, whether we get a tulsi leaf or we get a flower or even laddu or whatever it may be, vibhuti, we don't grumble. Why didn't they give me laddu prasadam? Why I got only flower? No, that is the prasada. We accept it as Lord's prasadam. Similarly, when the prasada buddhi is there, whatever the outcome that we get out of our actions, we take it as Lord's will. This acceptance comes to us, and this is the prasada buddhi. As the Bhagavad Gita says, prasade sarva dukkhanam hani rasyopajayate. When you have this prasada buddhi, you get mana prasada, the mind settles down. There is serenity in the mind, and in this serene state of mind, all your sorrows will come to an end. Your mind is not agitated. And this leads to the fifth buddhi, the fifth pointer, which is samatvam yoga uchyate. The samatva buddhi, we get the equanimity of the mind. Whatever the outcome, we do not grieve over it, or we do not exult over it. If it is a favorable outcome, we don't give credit to ourselves, and we don't get excited about it and or elated about it. Or some unfavorable outcome, we don't get dejected also, because we know it is Lord's prasadam. He knows what is good for me, and whatever has happened for my highest good. See, this equanimity is what Bhagwan expects of us from a devotee. Even in the very first letter that Bhagwan wrote to his brother Sheshamaraju on May 25th in the year 1947, Bhagwan mentions, I have this expectation of devotion. Those who are devoted to me must treat both grief and joy, gain and loss with the same mind. This equanimity is what qualifies us to be the highest devotee to the Lord. And this is samatva buddhi, samatvam yoga uchyate. So when we put all these pointers together, where both sadhana and seva are involved, we see the final outcome. Nimitta matram bhava savyasachi. O Arjuna, be my instrument. Here the Lord addresses Arjuna as Savyasachi. Who is a Savyasachi? He is an ambidextrous warrior. It means he can shoot arrows from both his hands. When the Lord says, O Savyasachi, the Lord means to say, you may be a great archer. You may be an ambidextrous archer. Even then, you are only my instrument. That is the meaning of Arjuna being addressed as Savyasachi. So this is the highest state of blessedness, to be an instrument in the hands of the Lord, nimitta matram, to be a hollow flute in the hands of the Lord, so that the Lord can blow his breath through us. And this is the state that we must reach through our seva and sadhana, for which we need both seva and sadhana, and we need to combine them both, and we need to do both of them in the right spirit. With deepest sense of gratitude, I thank Bhagwan for this blessing of speaking to all of you here today and share some of Bhagwan's teachings with all of you. And I will conclude with this anecdote. In the early 80s, Bhagwan had sent a sewing machine to the boys' hostel. And Swami thought if they have a sewing machine with them, they need not go into the village for small repair works and they can do it in the hostel itself. The brand of the sewing machine was Sahara. So the boys started talking. See, when there are so many famous brands like Merit, Singer, Usha, why Bhagwan has sent us this unheard of brand, Sahara? Then one student said, every day we are sitting in the mandir and singing Sahara do Bhagwan. So Bhagwan has sent us the Sahara. See, the student who shared this incident with us, he said, it is only later, when he graduated from Bhagwan's university, when he went into the world, then when he had to go through some testing and trying times and thick and thin of life, triumphs and tragedies, it is only then he realized that Bhagwan is the only Sahara sewing machine who can stitch up the torn ends, the torn bits of the cloth of his life and make it into a presentable cloth of life. So I also pray to God, I pray to Bhagwan on behalf of all of us to bless us to hold on to this Sai Sahara, come what may, so that we are able to tread the path of both Seva and Sadhana as per the teachings of Bhagwan, so that we become worthy of what Bhagwan as avatar has come down to give us. I am thankful to Sri Satya Sai Media Center and every one of you. Thank you very much. Jai Sairam.